Welcome to What Makes Up Your Mind? Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health from the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University School of Medicine. This is your invitation to meet the faculty dedicated to understanding our most complex organ, committed to curing mental illness, and inspired to help create a healthier, thriving world. It's great to welcome you back to What Makes Up Your Mind. I'm Jane McMillan. Did you know that when you clicked on the listen button just now for this episode, you actually hit a dispense button for a big dose of positivity? Especially as we look toward a future of greater societal mental well-being and the hopeful expansion of mental health care giving. Through a program called the Clinical Neuroscience Immersion Experience, CNIX for short, Stanford Psychiatry brings high school students into the world of brain-mind science. The two-week summer sessions, two in person on the Stanford campus and one virtual called CNVX, give these students rare access to Stanford's world-class doctors and researchers. The program is designed to foster a greater awareness of their own mental well-being and, perhaps, spark an interest in a career in mental health care. Dr. Laura Turner-Assel is the driving force behind CNIX in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences. She's also one of the presenters. So if you've got a high schooler in your life, have them join you now and listen in as she takes us inside this innovative, creative, and introspective experience. Dr. Laura Turner-Assel, it's really nice to have you on What Makes Up Your Mind. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are the manager of a program that I think sounds like so much fun. And if I had the qualifications, this is something I would love. Bright, energetic, curious high school students coming to Stanford with the Clinical Neuroscience Immersion Experience. What was the impetus for this?
I'm a little biased, but I agree with you. I think it's one of the most exciting programs that our department offers. And it was started in 2017 by our chair, Dr. Laura Roberts, who wanted to offer an opportunity for younger students, high school students, to be able to engage with the research and all of the awesome work that we are doing in the department. As you know, we're in the School of Medicine, and so we have a lot of trainees, everything from medical students to postdocs and graduate students, but we don't often get to interact with younger individuals who might be interested in the areas that we specialize in. And so it's an opportunity for undergrads and high school students to engage with our faculty and to learn a little bit about the work that we do in the department.
Well, mental well-being has really taken a much more predominant role in the national discussion. It's been in the media more. Celebrities are talking about it. And kind of along the same timeline as the CNIX program began, it really started to be part of a conversation. Have you noticed that young people are more aware of this now and are more interested in mental wellness, in policy discussions, talking about the issue?
Absolutely. And it's something that I'm really glad to see. I think that all of us are in the department to see that each year students are more interested, more willing to engage, and actually feeling really empowered to take leadership in some of these areas around mental health, and especially mental health of their peer group, their age. Adolescent mental health is one of our specialties, and it's one of the things that we highlight in the program. But the program has a threefold purpose. One of our main objectives is to help reduce the stigma of mental illness, struggles with mental health, and to help young people normalize and feel comfortable addressing these issues in their lives and in the lives of those around them, and to have a voice in some of these issues that really affect all of us in society. And then also to help them see a path for themselves as potentially being part of the profession to help further this research, potentially become clinicians, and to see a way for themselves to contribute to the work being done in these areas. And then finally, of course, to have their own experiences of engaging with the faculty and working on their own projects just to get a taste of how they can address some really relevant and important issues around mental health using their own interests, their own skills and gifts to be able to tackle some of these tough issues.
We've realized how short-handed we are in terms of mental health professionals. So engaging more young people could, you know, really create a whole new generation of additional caregivers.
It's definitely part of a larger project of trying to increase our pipeline in STEM in general, but specifically in mental health related professions, because especially with certain communities, underrepresented minority communities and other demographics, we see that a lot of students drop out or kind of don't see themselves as being a part of the population that can end up in these professions. And so we want to make it clear that we need all hands on deck, as many young people from as many backgrounds as we can get, helping them see that pathway and figure out how to navigate the workforce to kind of be on the front lines of the cutting edge work that's coming.
I know there are other mentoring programs around the United States and the world, but what makes this program really unique? If you were standing in front of a group of students and parents and teachers right now, what makes this program so special?
Well, I think first of all, our interactive seminars with our world-class faculty, we cover so many different areas that students may be interested in or may have never been exposed to, but we see it as our role to kind of put this information in front of them and help to spark their interest and help them find those areas that they might have a connection to. So from neuroscience to psychiatry to psychiatric epidemiology, behavioral science, social psychology, we try to cover a very wide gamut. So it's not this narrow focus on just neuroscience. It really encompasses a lot of connecting topic areas and research areas that our faculty and researchers represent. And I think that the diversity of our faculty lecturers, from psychiatrists to clinical psychologists, neuroscientists, social workers, it really does a good job of capturing and representing the diversity in the field and how we all put our heads and hands together to address these issues from many different angles. I think another thing that's really awesome is the staff mentors that are a key component of the program. These are our undergraduate students that we bring in to serve as mentors and guides for the participants in the program throughout their 2 weeks with us. In addition to the lectures, the participants engage with their staff mentors throughout the day. So at lunch, in small group conversations, and of course, while they're working on their small group projects, their mentors are really their touchstone and their point person throughout the program. So they build a close relationship with them and get a lot of assistance to make the best of the program. I think we try to create a really one-of-a-kind self-directed learning community so students can learn about areas they're passionate about. And then they also have this permission to explore topics that they didn't even know existed before they joined us. And so we encourage that kind of curiosity. You don't have to come having already taken a class or read a book in this particular area. We're all here to learn together. We learn from one another and we have fun kind of experimenting and exploring. I think the most unique aspect of the program might be the capstone project in their small groups, usually just 5 to 6 other people who have similar interests. And then each group chooses a mental health issue that they care about, and they are assigned the task of designing an innovative solution to help address that issue. To do that, we teach principles of design thinking, which is a popular model, which was also originated at Stanford in the design school, that kind of gives them a creative process for designing services or products that will meet the needs of the communities that they're hoping to serve with their solution. And so groups can create a prototype of their solution, and then they present that to the entire program on the final day. And so I think that that's one of the parts of the program that students have really enjoyed and raved about over the years. And it's unique, and it's a hands-on practical application of some of the things that they discuss in the lectures with our faculty.
Then, as we're talking about the Capstone Project, this is a great time to ask you about the classes themselves and the activities and how the program is structured and what their day might be like, the student's day.
Well, they are pretty busy days, pretty chock full, but we think that it flows pretty easily and goes by pretty fast just because they're so engaged. Some of the topics that our faculty will come in and lecture about are basically their own areas of expertise and research. We'll bring in experts in eating disorders, behavioral neuroscience, forensic psychiatry is one that's always really popular with the students.
Let's talk about what that is for folks who don't know.
Oh, forensic psychiatry is, we have Dr. Octavio Choi, who comes in and talks about psychiatrists who specialize in working with the legal system and essentially helping the courts determine if defendants actually have a legitimate case or claim of insanity based on things like fMRI brain scans and their neural anatomy. If the decisions that they made or the actions that they engaged in might have actually been influenced by any abnormalities in their brain structure or the functioning of their brains. It's one of those fields that brings in so many different topics, you know, legal systems and bias and ethics, plus neuroscience, kind of the melding of all of those. And students find that really fascinating because it's obviously a really practical application of what we know about how the brain works.
Yes. And what are some other examples?
Some of our faculty come in and talk about artificial intelligence and transcranial magnetic stimulation. We also talk about neurosurgery. We have Dr. Odette Harris, who's a neurosurgeon at Stanford and at the VA in Palo Alto. And she comes and talks about traumatic brain injury. Again, really engaging presentation and forces students to really think about these questions of life and death and some of these big topics, but in a really practical way, and thinking about how do we make choices as medical professionals about how to care for people who are really in bad shape. We also talk about sleep medicine, how sleep is so important for the functioning of our brain, how a lot of the disorders that people struggle with can sometimes be impacted by or even caused by issues with their sleep and the importance of sleep for the teenage brain in particular. And so students love to talk about that because it's one that is very relatable, but also something that you don't always realize is such a big deal and can have such an influence over the rest of your functioning throughout the day, from how you perform in school to how you relate to friends and family.
That sounds like something that would interest everybody, particularly young people.
Yeah.
Nutrition and stress and anxiety, perhaps trauma,
mm-hmm.
and the impact on the brain. These are all really important yet tough topics. And these are young people. The age range is between 14 and 18. That's a pretty wide range of maturity and experience. How do the instructors, how does the program address topics that may be triggering or that may resonate differently with this age group, the differences between 14 and 18 years old?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And we do recognize that students come to us with their own experiences and their own maybe personal or family histories with some of these conditions that we discuss. So specifically when we talk about clinical disorders like eating disorders, anxiety, depression, those are really common in the population at large and amongst young people. So we recognize that it might be a very sensitive topic for participants. We talk about neurodegenerative disease like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and a lot of our participants are interested in those topics because they have parents or grandparents that have struggled with these conditions and they've witnessed that, so they're interested in learning more. But because of that, some participants might need more support in processing the thoughts and feelings that come up during those lectures or during those conversations. And our staff and faculty are always able to hold space for that, either talk with participants about what's coming up for them one-on-one or allow them some space to process. As educators in the program, we're not acting in the capacity of clinicians, and so we don't do therapy. We don't try to do any kind of crisis management, but we do, especially when we're on campus, have access to our clinics and to people that can help de-escalate anything that might feel really sensitive in the moment, and then encourage and provide resources for students who may need to follow up with a mental health professional or may need to address some other issues that have come up for them based on what we've talked about in the program. We really encourage students to ask questions. We encourage open conversation and a diversity of perspectives. We do have community agreements in terms of how we engage with one another and talk with one another in the program, which we go over in the first day, so that we are all coming from a respectful place, maybe a curious place, but also being able to frame things in a way that aren't going to alienate or ostracize anyone based on their experience or lack thereof. We just want it to feel like a safe environment for people to learn and to explore. And we know that there can be, you know, we're human and what we're talking about is mental health. So we know that there can be some things that push buttons for people. So our faculty and staff are trained to facilitate those kinds of conversations in a skillful way that helps everyone feel that they can learn, but also be held in respect and compassion.
I can't imagine a more safe space to be. This might be a good time to talk about what the students do when they're not in class. You talked about guidelines of how they interact with each other. Again, pretty wide age range between 14 and 18. What do they do in the off hours?
The in-person program and the virtual program are both day programs, so we don't offer any kind of overnight residential experience. People are not staying on campus. But we do like to extend the conversations and the learning that happens during the program hours to those times where students aren't necessarily sitting together in the Zoom classroom or in the physical classroom on campus. And we do that by utilizing an online platform called Canvas, where we have discussion boards and additional articles, resources, videos, and things like that that are shared and posted between our staff and faculty and participants so that we can continue to engage one another. For the in-person program, outside of the lecture periods and the small group work periods where participants are working on their capstone projects with their staff mentors, we also just have opportunities to get to know one another as a learning community. We go to lunch together, we have downtime, sometimes play games, and we also do some social emotional learning curriculum with participants where we've again tried to incorporate really relevant topics to help participants get to know one another, get to know themselves, and learn how to process and deal with emotions that might come up for them just as they're going through their daily life, again, to help normalize and destigmatize the very normal and natural mental health issues that we all face before they kind of become problematic for people. And so all of these components are kind of part of their day, each day of the two-week program.
These are students who are facing one of the biggest and first transitions of their lives.
Yeah.
This is a really fruitful opportunity for them to learn about themselves and how to deal with the stressors and the decision making they're going to be facing as they transition into adulthood.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about developmental psychology and how it can be used as a tool right there in real time for them to think about, you know, what stage they're in, kind of how they're thinking about themselves as individuals, as members of families and communities, how they're developing their professional or academic identities. And so it's actually a really fun kind of lab space where they get to play around and use fun activities. And we try to also be careful to not make it feel too much like school. We recognize that they're on a college campus or they're interacting with college faculty, doing lectures and doing a lot of learning, but we want it to feel like it's a much broader exploration-based experience. We'll do things like walk around campus and do like a photo walk where they get to take pictures of things that they see that just inspire them or invoke a certain emotion. And then we come back and share those and talk about how we describe or label emotions based on our experiences in the world. We do things like create music playlists that they share with one another, and the playlists are supposed to represent different aspects of who they are and how they wish to present themselves to the world. You know, things like that where it's kind of outside the box of normal classroom work, but it gives them another opportunity to really use the psychology and the mental health resources and research available to really think about themselves and their world at a higher level.
That is a lot of important self-awareness work that probably everybody on the planet could benefit from. And it sets them up, I'm assuming, to be aware of how they're going to absorb what the other faculty and presenters are going to offer them.
Yeah, we're all kind of contributing to this same body of knowledge and all trying to figure out the same thing, which is how do humans function and how do we thrive? And right now, we're building so much knowledge and have so much access to technology, and yet we're just so aware of how much more we have to learn and how complex and fascinating this whole human experience is. You know, there will always be more work to do, and they can see themselves being a part of that as they move into the future.
And perhaps joining some of the faculty and researchers that they'll Absolutely. Be meeting. So who are these other dedicated people that want to share their summers with these students?
Oh my gosh, our faculty are amazing. We have a great roster of folks who have come through the program since its inception. We don't have the same exact lineup of presenters every year. We do have some that have faithfully returned to be with us. Some of our kind of veterans, as we say, like Dr. Rafael Paleo, neurologist and sleep medicine expert, and has done a lot of work with young people around adolescent sleep patterns and school start times and how that impacts their well-being and functioning. We have David Eagleman, who comes and talks about the secret life of the brain, everything from sensory issues to unconscious processes. Jamie Zeitzer, who's an expert on circadian rhythms. How do they work when you're outside of your normal context? If people travel into outer space, or if they're living in an environment where you don't have the normal day and night cycles that you're used to, how does that alter our biology and our functioning? And what does that mean for us as a species? Dr. Kastoop Suvekar is our expert in artificial intelligence, who does a lot of research in that area and is actually trained in business as well. And so he's done lectures for our students on everything from how to engage in machine learning to how artificial intelligence can be used to improve mental health delivery systems. These are things that students are really interested in. Obviously, this is going to impact them as they get older, whether they become mental health professionals or they utilize mental health services. These are things that they're going to increasingly see as a part of their worlds. And so they're always really excited to talk about these things and to imagine where this could go, how this could change so rapidly over the next few years. So it's nice to be able to have some of our faculty consistently come back and kind of bring updates and let us know what is happening kind of at the forefront of some of these fields that they're working in.
These professionals are generally not accessible to most of us. So what an opportunity, really.
Yeah, I think it's really cool for the students to be able to talk to them and ask questions and share ideas, and that the faculty listen. You know, they want to hear what young people think and what their experiences are and if the things that they're sharing resonate. So I think it's a nice exchange.
This makes me think of something we started to talk about at the very beginning, and that is the wide variety of students' interests that could be applicable in this program. It's not just for students who are already immersed in science in high school. What other interests or areas might lend themselves to this program? Maybe for a potential career in neuroscience and the behavioral sciences that they never thought they would be interested in. Let's say a young person right now is into drama or philosophy, or they're an athlete. These all tie in somehow, correct? So you don't have to be a science major already.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we love the most is when students come to us with all of their interests and all of their wide variety of backgrounds. Some come having taken AP psychology and done a bunch of other neuroscience or brain health, you know, brain research related camps. And some come to us never having even cracked a psychology textbook or talked about mental health in their schools or in their families or anything. And all of that is welcome because it adds to the richness of our learning community. People have interest in everything from the arts and film and dance to engineering and other areas that they are well-versed in or interested in. And all of that can inform their participation in the program because, you know, mental health, psychology, psychiatry, neuroscience, brain research, it's so broad and has so many different impacts and different fields and is informed by so many different fields that there's always a connection that students can make to something that they're already interested in. A lot of students come to us because they're really just interested in a particular condition or experience. Like a lot of students are interested in autism or ADHD, again, because of their own personal experience or with someone in their family or someone that they're close to. And they just want to learn about that. But they come and they, again, see how that one thing might be connected to so many other aspects of research and mental health in general. And so, you know, sometimes they will come with an interest in obsessive compulsive disorder or addiction and substance use disorders. And then they take one of the lectures on genetics and something clicks. And so now they're interested in that. And it kind of just snowballs and leads to this whole body of knowledge and area of research that they didn't realize they might be interested in. Even if they don't decide to major in that, even if they don't decide to study it anymore after they leave our program, we just love that they're aware that it exists and they see it as a, you know, something potentially useful to them or important to learn about just in terms of life.
How do you make it accessible to a wide variety of students with different life experiences?
We do make sure that we offer scholarships for applicants who need any kind of financial assistance. We try to be very generous with that because we recognize that although it's a, you know, the program costs quite a bit of money to run, and so there is a program fee, but we don't want that fee to be prohibitive for anyone who might be interested in participating in the program. And so students, as part of the application, just need to let us know that they'd like to be considered for a scholarship and to request financial assistance. We try to make sure that we can accommodate as many people as possible.
And you do have one virtual session every year and then two in-person sessions on campus.
Yes.
So that helps for folks who are far away.
Absolutely. We started doing the virtual sessions in 2020 when, you know, we all know that everything went virtual for a while. We found that, you know, staff really, really loved it. It continued to be a great opportunity. So now we have both. I think that they're both great offerings, obviously different experiences. We can't exactly replicate the Stanford campus experience through Zoom, but we are able to then welcome students from all around the country and all around the world who bring those perspectives into the program. And yes, that obviously cuts down on the cost for them and the logistical issues. And then we're actually able to have a little bit more time too for some of our lectures. It balances out. I think that both of those opportunities are great for students to take advantage of.
You mentioned mentors at the beginning of our chat. So that tells me that if a student is lucky enough to be in this program, that once it's over, it's not really over. There are other opportunities to stay connected and continue to learn and help.
Oh my gosh, yes. One of the things we tell all of our participants is like, don't let it stop here. Obviously, the learning can continue and the resources that we provide, they're welcome to take with them. They're welcome to stay in contact with one another or with our faculty and staff. But also, we always love to have former participants come back and serve as staff mentors for younger participants. So once they graduate from high school, and usually after they complete one or two years of undergrad, they bring their wealth of knowledge and experience back and kind of pay it forward to participants who are usually very fascinated with these undergrads who seem so much further ahead than them, but are really just a couple of years older. It's a really fun and I think fruitful kind of near peer exchange that they get to have in that way.
Yeah, within reach. What the mentors are doing is easily within reach of the students. What a great exchange and handoff.
Yeah.
It just sounds like the most positive experience for students, for the presenters, for you, and for all of us who can look forward to a whole new generation of perhaps caregivers or at least adults who are much more self-aware. So thank you so much for the program, and thank you for explaining it to us.
Thank you, Jane. It's been such an honor to manage the program for the past few years, and it's been an honor to talk to you about it today.
Dr. Laura Turner-Essel, Program Manager of CNIX, the Clinical Neuroscience Immersion Experience for High School Students from the Stanford Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, one of the special initiatives of the chair, Dr. Laura Roberts, to forward the department's mission of creating the path to a better future. We have the link to all of the information you need about the CNIX application process, including financial assistance, in our program notes. Please do take a look. And please do join us again on What Makes Up Your Mind. I'm Jane McMillan. You've been listening to What Makes Up Your Mind. Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health from the experts in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University School of Medicine. For more information on this program and all of our transformational work, visit us at med.stanford.edu/psychiatry. What Makes Up Your Mind? Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health is a production of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University School of Medicine, a copyright of the Board of Trustees of Stanford University.